Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here, and you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. So glad you could drop by for another conversation with me. Today, I'm excited to welcome my sister friend, April Ryan. April and I go way back to days when she was covering me as a county chairman here in Prince George's. I've known her and loved her a long time. She is the Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief and Senior White House Correspondent at The Griot. She is the longest serving Black female White House correspondent in history. And with a 25-year tenure spanning five presidential administrations, April is one of a kind. She is also the author of the book, which is a great read. It's out now for about a year. Black Women Will Save the World. We have a great conversation. I got her right in the middle on the road traveling, so it was a lot of fun sort of bumping in along the way with her in her car. So anyway, stay tuned, folks, for a great conversation with April Ryan right here on the Michael Steele Podcast. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. Well, I'm excited about this conversation because I got my friend April Ryan on the road. She's out and about doing her thing, and I'm glad she could take a moment and drop in to say hello. April, what's up?
I don't know. You tell me. There's so much going on.
I know. But look, I'm going to get to the controversy that you started a few days ago in a moment.
I didn't start anything.
This girl sent out a tweet, folks, and all hell broke loose. But that's okay. That's my April Ryan. I love her. She is one of the best out there. So let me just get into a little bit of story with you, which I'm always fascinated to talk to you. We've talked before about your journey in journalism, the work you've done, the pioneering example that you have set, not just for, you know, journalists out there, but specifically for young women breaking into this space, being not just the lady in the room, but at the table. Not just having, you know, a voice in the conversation, but directing the conversation. What are you saying to young journalists out there, particularly young women, when they see the political system turn on its head the way it has and turn against the craft of that you're engaged in trying to just tell the story of history as it's happening?
You know, number one, it's not about you. Number two, I think I came in before the turn when journalists were journalists before we started reporting on each other, before we became liberal journalists or conservative journalists. So I kind of know the lay of the land, but this is a different day, Michael. Journalism is kind of a microcosm of what we're seeing on the political spectrum, particularly when it comes to Washington. What would I tell a young woman, a Black woman who wants to get in it? One, we need you. Two, we need you. But three, most importantly, this is not about you. It's about the stories that you're going to write about the stories that you're going to ask questions about, because a lot of times those questions bring forth answers. And sometimes, you know, we are very into, oh, it's me on TV or whatever. It's not about you. The stakes are so high. Things are just so off kilter. I'm not trying to use President Biden's words when he talked about the Supreme Court, but things are different from when, you know, you and I watched the news when we were young people. Right. You know, I remember Walter Cronkite. That's the way it was. And that's the way it was. It wasn't Democrat, Republican. It was just, look, here are the facts. And then you surmise after that. Now it's just changed so much.
And let me ask you, because you make an excellent point there. Do you think we can, let's say tomorrow morning, XYZ broadcast, whether it's a streaming platform or a network platform or a cable platform, said, here's a news program. All we're doing is delivering. There's no opinion. There's no, we're just going to deliver the news. We're not shading it. We're not coloring it. Would it survive?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Yeah, that's sad to hear.
Yeah, I know. Because we're so into this tribalism. I'm with this camp. You're with that camp. So it's just crazy. I mean, you could kind of tell who's who with what they put in their front yard now. I hate to say that.
Yeah.
It's just gotten to be so crazy. And it doesn't have to be a political sign. It could be a flag. It could be a flag that has this on it or a flag that has... It is sickening how much this melting pot has turned into a pot of gumbo over here, a pot of goulash over there. I mean, it's so many different pots instead of one big pot. And I'm concerned about where we're going. It's that, I think, again, journalism is a microcosm of the larger picture. It's not just politics. It's not just DC. But I think we're watching the reshaping and the shifting and changing of this great nation.
Well, so to that point, one of the things that I've admired about you is not just your tenacity and your sort of balls to the wall. You know, I can run
balls to the wall.
I can run with the big dogs too. Don't.
Oh yeah, now let me tell you something. You bring it to me, I'm going to give it back, because that's the thing. Don't assume about me.
Right.
Don't assume that I'm afraid, because that fear turns into, what is it, fight or flight?
Yeah.
I don't run. And that's the bad part. I don't run.
I can tell y'all that she does not run. But the thing about it is, you've been able to, I think, uniquely marry your journalism and your activism. One informs the other, but does not consume the other. In other words, when you write and tell the stories, you write from the perspective of like you just said, Walter Cronkite, hear the facts. Here's what's happening.
Here's the history, yeah.
Here's the history. But then when it's time to turn that corner to say, these are things we should be thinking about, you are very adept at sort of narrating that side of the story too, which originates in your activism, putting in those terms, your sense of what's right and wrong, your sense of, not just the history, but okay, this is the impact on my people, on my community, on these communities. How do you find that in this day and age, sort of walking that fine line, if you will?
So here's the thing. I just started. And I do, but I don't. It all depends on how the word activism is used. If it's used in the pejorative sense, I run from it. But in this moment, as a journalist, I am an expert in what I'm writing about, or the stories, the focus that I have. That's Black America. Black America is not just African Americans. It's those who come from different parts of the world who come here, or, because everyone doesn't have the slave experience. So African Americans are incorporated in Black America.
Right.
So when I'm reporting, and unfortunately, that's just like our Latino brothers and sisters. Everybody just doesn't come from Mexico just because they speak Spanish.
Right.
So, and it's unfortunate. You have to educate people, right?
Right.
So, and that's my thing. If my activism is about education, so be it. Especially when people are shutting down our books. And as we talk about the platform formerly known as Twitter, somebody said, I said something in the story that we're going to talk about in a minute about you. I said something about, hence Juneteenth, the fact that you didn't tell us for 2 years that we were free because you didn't want us free. And they were like, is that true? And someone said, Google it. It is as true as the day is long.
Yeah.
I take what I do seriously, because if you sit in that seat, that hot seat in that White House, and a president calls on you, you damn sure better know what you're talking about.
Right.
You damn sure need to know the backstory, the current story, and what it could possibly hold in the future, one way or the other, or all the ways it could go. I mean, you have to be a student of history, of people. And if that's what activism is, hey, I'm an activist. I am an expert in what I do. And yes, I still have a lot more to go. But well, it's important when you inform the masses.
It is important. And since you raised Juneteenth, and we're right on the heels of having celebrated Juneteenth, you... Match slap. Lord bless us. Okay.
Ooh.
Let's just go there. So
wait a minute, but I haven't seen Match Slap in a minute. And you know, Match Slap, when I used to, you know, and you know this, I talked to Democrats, I talked to Republicans, and I'm like, Match Slap was reaching out. I said, okay. I said, let me give him a little bit of what he wants.
Right.
And then it took him a whole day to respond. And then then after that, I'm like, don't come over here with this. And then he ultimately says how proud he is of the Confederacy and Civil War and all of that. So guess what? You're making my point as to what we were talking
about.
Well,
but let's set it up, because I think it's an important an important thing to sort of show how this comes together. So he puts out a tweet.
Asked on MSNBC talking about how Trump is not a friend to black people.
Right. So
trip in Detroit the black church with white people in the church.
Right. Yes. Right. So let's so you have this conversation about, you know, Trump talking about how he's doing all this stuff. There are people who are looking for a better life. And so forth, and he's going about what he's doing, all you know, what he's doing for black folks. And you just basically say, you know, we can keep talking about this, we need to bring it up. So Matt comes in with a tweet to you saying, I like the fact that Trump is pushing the GOP back to its roots and appealing to black voters. And you said, well, okay.
Yeah, pull the tweet. Yes.
I'm reading the tweet. You said, I remember when Michael Steele tried to as head of the RNC to court black people to join the party, and he was chastised and rebuffed by the GOP. Reince Priebus was also general counsel at the time. So why is this one so different and a big deal? Please explain, Schlapp, since you responded to my post. He then comes back with this crazy tweet. He says, can you admit that the reason the GOP was created, right? Even before that, it goes a little bit deeper. So then you say, Match Slap, let's talk about slavery. Enslaved Africans were freed under duress, and then an entire war was fought over it. Can you say civil war? And don't brag about slavery, as you all did not want us to know, and we were told 2 years later, hence Juneteenth, the point you just made. He comes back, you know, at some point, brother got to realize who he's talking to and just stop. He comes back. Can you admit that one reason the GOP was created was to end slavery and extend civil rights to former slaves? We can all celebrate Juneteenth because Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. You can take down the statues, but history remains. I'm proud of it. You just rightly pointed out to him, so you're proud of enslaving my ancestors so you could profit and never give us equality? I mean, and that's what this, that just underscores so much of the rationale for this continuation and flirtation with white nationalism and the KKK.
Neo-Nazism.
It's like, okay, so that's what you're proud of. You're proud of the enslavement of other people. You want to level up that history. And it just speaks volumes to me, particularly from someone like Schlapp. And he even responded at some point, I tried to help Michael Steele. Man, Schlapp ain't do shit for me. He didn't do a damn thing for me. In fact, not one inch of help for me at all when I was RNC chairman. And I didn't need his help.
So let me say this to you. I remember, and the proudest I ever was of you when you were the head of the RNC, when Barack Obama was the president of the United States, you grabbed Kevin Lyles.
Yep.
And who else was it? And y'all walked around trying to teach people about finances and building businesses and bringing Black people in. I remember that. I wrote about that.
Yeah.
And at that time, I believe Mike Tyson was your then brother-in-law.
Yep.
You brought him into the fold. And see, they like to put up the picture of Mike Tyson and Don King, but what they failed to talk about is the fact that you brought Mike Tyson into the fold. And I'm like, these people are crazy. They need to know the history. And that's what I'm talking about. And I'm not an activism. This is just truth. I'm not an activist telling this. This is the truth that they want to negate. And we got to talk about it. Well, who was the other person that you had out there with Kevin Lyles?
Russell Simmons. It was Russell Simmons. My buddy Russell Simmons.
We don't need to talk about Russell anymore, but yeah.
No, but I'm just saying, at that time, Russell was, and I worked on this effort. He was very much a part of it. Mike Tyson, Lyle, a number of these guys, because I really believed in that entrepreneurial impact that African Americans have brought, not could bring, but have brought to the creation of this country and the establishment of its economic order that we didn't get to fully participate in. So now is the time, it was the time in my thinking that we should do that. Matt Slapp wasn't involved in any of that. He had nothing to do with it.
They want to tear your name down. And I remember you were doing that. And I remember during the Bush years, when J.C. Watts would come to the White House, he's like, yeah, you know, we want 11%. I'm like, 11%? I remember standing at a stakeout with J.C. Watts, Black, with Oklahoma, right?
Oklahoma. Yeah, J.C. Watts of Oklahoma. That's a good buddy of mine.
Oklahoma, trying to bring other Blacks into the Republican Party. Black folks, Trump ain't new to this. I mean, this ain't new for Republicans, but he's new to this. A man who talked about S-hole nations and all sorts of stuff, but yet you had earnest efforts with you guys, and now he's supposed to be the savior to bring Black folks in.
The only thing Donald Trump is bringing to the conversation with Black people is a pair of gold lame tennis shoes and claiming he's going to protect our right to menthol cigarettes. That's all he's doing.
Right. He's not bringing that to my conversation because I don't like those ugly shoes. they're tacky. And to say, you know, we like him because we're indicted. I've never been indicted for my brothers and sisters and cousins and whomever out there.
Right.
I've been indicted.
I mean, think about how stupid that is. How much disrespect do you have for us to think you can put up a picture of your damn mugshot? And I, as a young African-American male or female sitting in a high school, attending Howard University or Morehouse University or Harvard University, looks at that mugshot and goes, I identify with that. What the hell are you saying to me?
And I don't identify with that. I attended Morgan State in good old Baltimore City that he called rat infested, et cetera, et cetera. This man has got a history of anti-Blackness, and now all of a sudden he's the savior for the Republican Party to bring Black
folks something to Black folks. Okay, I almost said something terrible, so I'm not going to say it.
Don't say it. Because you know Matt Slapp and everybody else would be looking to use it somewhere. Leave alone.
I almost slipped a real good one out there. We are having a great conversation with my friend April Ryan. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to get into a little bit of politics with you, with you, April, not just the set up for this election, but the role that African Americans are already playing in shaping the direction and potential outcome. More with April Ryan right after this.
Hey all, Glenn Kirshner here. So friends, I hope you'll join me on my audio podcast, Justice Matters. Do you care about ethics in government, criminal justice reform, a conflict-free federal judiciary? I thought so. On Justice Matters, we take on issues involving the need to reform our government and its institutions. And we talk about real achievable reform. I hope you'll join us. Look for Justice Matters wherever you usually get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everybody, to Michael Steele Podcast. I'm Michael Steele. We are having a great conversation. I got my sister April Ryan out on the road, so that's why the mic may sound a little bit like she's in a little can, but she's not. She's just out there working hard and taking care of business, but I'm glad she's with us. So April, before we went to break, we were talking about, you know, Trump claiming he's the savior of black people and he's going to bring all this stuff. All, you know, MAGA's going to be good for you. We set that bull aside, but the reality of it is, and you wrote about this actually, in your great piece, Black Women Will Save the World, your book that came out, recently. And you noted, with respect to the role that, you know, black women have played in voting rights, the role that black women have played in all aspects of our civic life, if you will. And you note that we just don't go on our own. We take our families, our friends, and communities with us.
Yes.
We lead, not just vote. We lead when we talk about the impact of what will happen with our voter rights being really eroded in such a massive way. When you're talking ability or possibility of 48 states and not having a federal intervention, then we're talking about the erosion of black political power. And so you lay back from the early days of this union, the role that women have played, but more importantly, the role of black women have played in creating energy around the vote. And we saw that with Clyburn and coming and delivering South Carolina for Joe Biden. What do you think is going to happen this time around? Because you're getting a whole lot of, I mean, taking the Trump stuff aside, you do have a cohort of African-Americans who are not as enthusiastic about it. They're willing to sit this election out, not appreciating that staying home helps nobody but Trump.
Yes.
What are you saying, or what is the expectation that we should have?
And Robert Kennedy in this thing.
Yes. No. Exactly. Exactly.
You know, Robert Kennedy Jr. in this helps nobody but Trump too. And it's so ironic that his family is all supporting Biden and not him. They're taking a strong stance against him as well. So Here's the deal. You know, in this moment where we are, you know, every election we say, oh, this is the biggest election of my lifetime. You know, in these modern ages, yeah, it has been. You know, think about it when it was Bush versus Gore. And then, you know, after that, we had 9/11. Were we going to stay the course with the same person? And then were we going to try something that we stayed with the same person? We had 8 years of Bush and people were talking about, oh my God, this is the biggest election. And I'll never forget. Remember when they were talking about what would Jesus do? And it got to that point. What would Jesus do? I said, what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were pulling out all the stops on the Republican side. And people were like, well, does it make a difference? Blah, 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 blah. And then when Barack Obama became president, you know, people were like, I remember when a lot of people were like, oh, he has no chance. And then South Carolina happened and Bill Clinton kind of made a little misstep. And not only South Carolina, but he won Iowa. Iowa was big for him to win. And then that misstep with South Carolina for Bill Clinton. And people saw the first chance of a black man really having a viable chance. And he wound up being president of the United States. And then, I mean, it was crazy with him versus John McCain and Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, oh my God, Sarah Palin, oh my gosh, she helped create this new era of us versus them. And people don't realize that. And it was very, and God rest his soul, John McCain tried to dampen it down, but he could only do so much. Because look at what happened.
Yeah.
Donald Trump became president. He was talking about John McCain being a prisoner of war. And I don't respect him. I said, what? You didn't even go into the military. But since you're talking about patriotism, and you are talking against someone whose family fought and died for us. I said, man, please. But every time we go into these situations, we keep saying, this is the most transformational, most pivotal moment in history. But this one really is. Because democracy has changed. Democracy, democracy in all capital letters, is shifting and being erased.
Yeah.
The rule of law has been thrown out the window. And I'm not saying this is good versus evil. I'm just saying you have a man who legitimately has been convicted of 34 felony counts and getting ready to be sentenced on July the 11th. And yet you can't, there's some people who are convicted who can't even get jobs in certain areas.
Right. Right.
No, you can't even. And my daughter just applied for the apartment. They wanted to know if she had any convictions. I said, no. I said, wow, how deep is this? Yep. I said, a man who is convicted could be president, but she couldn't. But if he wanted to get this apartment, he could. That's telling you how upside down this is and how inside out, how twisty turny this is. But when people talk about, I'm sitting it out because they feel, whether they feel Biden is too old or not, or whether they feel Donald Trump, you know, is not this, that, or the other, they feel it doesn't matter. But right. It does. And I understand why a lot of African Americans or Black people are upset, because Joe Biden came in saying, hey, I'm going to be the savior for you to a certain extent after Charlottesville. But since then, we've lost voting rights completely. It's completely gutted. We are now having attacks against affirmative action. Brown v. Board has been attacked, you know, with that Supreme Court decision right. on affirmative action in admissions in college education. And a lot of companies, a lot of corporate companies are taking that to believe instead of making it education, they're taking it to corporate America. And the Justice Department and the Department of Education said, you're reading it wrong. And then there's an attack by Edward Blum and all these others who want to shut down these programs to help the underserved.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was going to say that I think you hit on a number of salient aspects of what makes this election dynamically challenging.
Right.
For the Biden Black team. Yeah. And specifically for Black folks, too, because
But before you get into that, though. But in the midst of all of this, no matter where I go, these Black women out here said, we got to vote. We got to get them together. Grassroots people, these old mothers who knew the cost of going to the polls back right. in the day. You know, these hands, these people who have these withered hands that show time and wisdom. You know, these women are going out there trying to invigorate. I hear the men, too. But the women are the ones who are the backbone in the House saying, look, we got to do something. But there's some also saying, you know, I'm not voting until I can get $1 million like the presidents and stuff. I've heard those things, too.
Yeah.
It's still unbalanced. We're in such an unbalanced time. Equity is fleeting in a lot of ways. And I'm not being a race baiter. I'm stating fact. And at the end of the day, politics is personal. You know that.
Yep. No, it is personal.
Yeah, people want their share of the pie. That's one reason why they feel like, why should I go? Because they don't feel like it's touching them. And I think Biden's message has to be more personal. I don't know what he's got to do, but they've got to reach people where they are versus these overarching, broad, pie-in-the-sky things. People, what's happening over here on the House of the Hill versus down here on the street that hasn't been swept and clean, it's two totally different dynamics.
Yeah, that's very well put.
And each one of them wants to be touched and know that they matter.
So keeping it personal, how does Kamala Harris affect the campaign, the reelection, and a possible second term?
Well, the way I understand it, she has been meeting with Black men on Sundays. She has these meetings and she's been talking about issues. She's being more vocal. She's been out there a little bit more. She's having many conversations and just trying to touch people. And really, to be honest with you, she could be his, one of his silver bullets. Barack Obama definitely is going to do the best he can. I think Joe Biden, Joe Biden wanted to be too much of his own president and walked away so much from the Obama administration. It's hard for people to put them back together again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, but I think Kamala Harris, is doing what she can. And I mean, it's going to be a heavy lift because right now, you know, they have to tout the greatness of what they did, the jobs, best than any other president in our modern age, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you don't hear about it. And people are like, okay, but what have you done for me lately? I'm not feeling it. When gas prices, when he was releasing the strategic oil reserves, certain communities were feeling it, but the ones where the streets weren't swept, they were like, well, why is my gas still this price when over there in the pretty section, it's gone down, you know?
Right.
So it's personal. So they got to figure out in these waning months, how personal is it going to be? How can they reach people? And, you know, I am just excited. I'm going to have my popcorn. I'm excited about this debate.
Yeah, because... so let's talk about that. You've got the presidential, the first presidential debate coming up a week from today, as we're recording this conversation. Joe Biden, current president of the United States, will square off against Donald Trump, the former president of the United States. How are you assessing that head-to-head?
Well, let me say this. Donald Trump is just going to be meeting with his vice presidential wannabes or possibilities. But I think they're going to give him, some good stuff too. I think they're going to give him good information so he can go into it. He's not going to do a standard practice where Joe Biden is hunkering down at Camp David, having debate prep. I would love to see that debate prep. Because, you know, Donald Trump doesn't go by the traditional script. He'll start talking about it. Oh, Sleepy Joe, you look sleepy.
Well,
now.
we just listened to the man wax poetic about electric batteries and sharks. So,
Oh, my God. All you got to do is think
anything's possible.
Flashlights and bleach.
There you go.
So I'm sure they're helping him with some wizards, some one-liners, and some witty quips, as well as policy. We haven't heard really much policy from Donald Trump except retribution and who he's going to go after. He's going to go after Merrick Garland and all these people in the White House. And then he's also talking about sending folks back, shutting down the border. Those are the only two things that I've heard. Where does that hit people? So I'm going to have my popcorn and I'm going to be writing down, but you know, in my house, my husband and I were like, "Woo, did you hear that?" But I'm supposed to be, I also have to work for the Grio. I have to do the pre and post show. So hopefully I'm either going to be in Atlanta doing it or at the studio or maybe at my home. I don't know, but either way, I'm going to be doing it one way or the other.
I will be hunkered down at MSNBC studios in DC. So I'd just be as far away from the crazy as possible. I think this debate is going to be an interesting one from the standpoint that as voters, regardless of the other roles that we play in life, you know, journalists and politicians, et cetera, as voters, we're going to see two older men, who are laid bare. Without the entrapments and the support of an audience and cat callers and noise, we're going to see them raw and we're going to hear them raw. And that's going to be fascinating for me to watch. And the second part will be, how do we hear it? How do we see it? Because it's one thing when someone says something stupid and everyone is applauding and you're led to believe, well, maybe it wasn't as stupid as it sounded to me. And it's another when that isn't there. When there is,
they say something stupid
and everybody hears it the same and they go, oh, well, that was stupid.
Let me say this. You know automatically that the machines, the campaigns are going to be out. Did you hear Donald Trump say that? Did you hear? But see, I don't care about what the campaigns say. Was a win or a loss that this one said. I want to hear what the public says.
Well, that's the point.
They're going to have social platforms. Right. Yeah.
It's going to be a hot mess for them in the sense that they'll have a lot more to clean up on aisle nine than Joe Biden will in that regard. So you mentioned the vice presidential picks for Trump. Where are you laying your money right now as we begin to wind down?
Well, let me tell you, Kellyanne Conway, before I said, well, I will tell you what I said to her at the White House, at Tammy Haddad's brunch at the White House Correspondents Association dinner in April. I said, so Kelly, I said, so what do you think? She said, well, you know, all the women have blown themselves up to include the one talking about, you know, the dog killing the dog.
Christy Noem.
That was the dumbest thing she could have done on her own. Nobody told her. It wasn't provoked. She just shot herself in the foot with that. She shot the dog and herself in the foot with that one. killed the dog, but her foot, I'm sure her foot is hurting right now. She's like, why did I do that?
Right.
So the women are kind of out, except I still think, even though Nikki Haley says she's not, I don't know.
Nikki's your sleeper.
She could be. Let me give you this. If it's not Nikki Haley, it's going to be a minority man, Little Marco, according to Donald Trump, or it's going to be Byron Donalds. Yes, he's young, but Byron Donalds.
I don't see a world in which Byron.
I know, but this is the man.
He brings absolutely nothing to the state.
In my opinion, you're absolutely right, but he is a sycophant. He loves Donald Trump. And Donald Trump wants somebody, and so does Tim Scott. So I'm thinking it's going to be Marco Rubio, Tim Scott, or Byron Donalds. But I talked to Armstrong Williams today, and he still stands on Ben Carson, because Ben Carson and Donald Trump have this weird relationship. They've had it for a long time, and he consults with Donald Trump. I don't see what Ben Carson would bring, but. Ben, he and bring
well, what he would bring, he, what he would bring is someone who would absolutely do everything Donald Trump told him to do.
That's what I'm saying. Just like Tim Scott in a Byron.
No, Donald. I think there's a line with Tim Scott. There may not be with Byron Donalds, but I think there is a line with Tim Scott. Tim Scott aligns much more with Mike Pence than
no, he doesn't. No, he doesn't.
No,
I think
there is a line for Tim, knowing Tim Scott for as long as I've known him, and people forget I was part of the team that got him elected in 2010. So I've known.
So
him
was for, Nikki Haley, and he turned.
And
on
I got
Nikki
her
Haley.
Elected as well.
And he turned on Nikki Haley. She helped him too, and she turned.
So,
on
but I think there is a line for him. In what he may be asked to do for Donald Trump. Byron, I agree with you, is all about the proximity and the power.
Yes.
But otherwise, okay. And I'm just being, I look, dude, when you think Jim Crow was a good era for Black folks, that's check, please, you know.
And that's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. bring that shit into the Black community and have a conversation to see how it goes. So anyway, I still think, and this is crazy, I know, I like the Nikki Haley play as a sleeper. I can actually buy that. I still think Elise Stefanik is in play. And Governor Burgum.
Really?
Yep.
I think he needs a minority for cushion.
Why?
For
what blackness. Does he need a minority?
A cushion for blackness.
What is he? What he does he need a minority for? What does he need a minority vote?
He doesn't want to go down in history as that man. Who was
he's not getting
racist.
How much of the black vote do you think Tim Scott or Byron Donalds or Carson is going to give Donald Trump?
They would probably hope for 20 or 30%.
Oh hell no! April, stop it! Stop it!
I said, did you hear the magic word hope? Hope.
Yeah, I hope to have hair tomorrow morning too, but I know that shit ain't happening. Come on. Talking about some damn 20%. The man got 8% 4 years ago.
But you know what? Realistically, you know, I would think realistically maybe 8 to 11% for him this time.
George Bush got 12.
That part. And J.C. Watts was pushing for more then.
Thank you. So, come on, stop it. All right, so.
I don't know. I'm just telling you what they, you know. I don't know.
April Ryan, folks, she is one of the best. I love it. I love it when I get to hang out with my sister friend and we get to talk a little shop, a little politics, a little
call
journalism.
me when we not call me when I don't bring up your name and start trouble. I think I won that one. I was like,
no, you won that one. No, it was.
I was like, drop the mic, bam.
No, you absolutely won that Twitter battle. There's no doubt about that. But now I appreciate you as always.
Well, where has he been? He came out. I'm like, what? I'm like, okay, you want this? I said, you don't want this, brother, but he got it. And he got it good. Yeah. But
she is one of the best. She is the Washington, D.C. bureau chief and senior White House correspondent at The Griot, the longest serving black female White House correspondent
in history.
She is the incomparable April Ryan. Thank you so much for being on the Michael Steele podcast.
Anytime, my friend. Thank you, Michael.
Oh, thank you. And that does it for our time together, folks. We really appreciate you. If you like the podcast, you know what to do. Tell a friend, share it. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts. Do a download thing. I love it when you do that. Check us out on Twitter at Michael Steele and the podcast Twitter at Steele_podcast. Follow April Ryan on Twitter at April D. Ryan for sure. Until next time, be safe, be well. It's summer, baby. It's the official summer fun time. Go out there, do your thing, boo. Just do it safely.
Peace.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.